The K-Jazz Show, Sundays on Kofifi FM 97.2.
From Johannesburg to Mali to Detroit, our next guest has placed her musical execution in understanding the history and sonic of South Africa and the African diaspora. With jazz as her training, she is highly revered for her graceful and dynamic performances, also her unique ability to authentically connect with any audiences. Spent time as a student at the New England Conservatory in Boston, her passion always led with telling stories from our continent, an activist who galvanizes women and girls in the arts to be leaders and critically conscious members of society. She is on the cusp of releasing her debut contribution to the landscape, Batu. I say she is the sound of jazz to come. Naledi is a vocalist, educator, storyteller, and she is our cover story.
Così si cale la cue l'om saba lue la pan si com l'ambo così si cale la cue si si dice si si du setina, si si du set kosomandla wo, kosi si kale.
Welcome to the show.
Hello, Ngwako. Wow, that was quite a mouthful. Thank you for the beautiful introduction.
Thank you for joining us. You know, I want to start here. Naledi. The Naledi Masilo story. Where does it all begin?
It all begins in Johannesburg, South Africa. I was born into Soweto, into a family from the Eastern Cape, from the Free State, from Lesotho. And I began, you know, just creating this identity that I occupy today through that place. I think one of the most significant parts of my growing up, things that kind of touched me most, was that coming from a very multi-racial, multi-ethnic, multi-identity sort of space, as Johannesburg is, gave me a really great foreground and background to who I am today. I speak, you know, over 7 languages. Mm. I have learned so much from people who I grew up with. You know, I learned one of the languages because the kid I grew up with spoke Pedi, and so we had to speak in that language, and then my granny speaking Xhosa, and you know, my mom speaking Sesotho to me. And so just kind of having that melting pot and that mix of cultures has really made me someone that has been so interested and so invested in different sorts of communities and how these communities are able to live as one, as we do in Johannesburg.
Yeah.
So I would say that's kind of where it started and where it's growing from.
You tell the story of growing up where you had so many ideas and dreams, and some of your neighbors, I'm sure they also remember it. You know, those that are still listening, you know, during that time probably will never forget how many business ideas you had, you know, on a weekly basis. I don't know how they kept up. But anyway, straight to what we're doing. Naledi, you know, have you always had this fire, you know, and did you ever think that out of all the ideas, music would be the one that you'd follow?
It's quite interesting. I was speaking to my mom yesterday and I was sharing with her, I have a big love for musical theater. And, you know, I think arts as a whole has always been something that has been so intrinsic to who I am. I started dancing. I did ballet from 4 years until 18 years. I was doing theater at school, and I'd always just really loved music. I started learning piano, teaching myself piano in grade 4, so around 9 years old, because my dad played guitar and he would always go to music stores to go buy, you know, books and stuff. He was teaching himself the classical guitar at the time, and I would go with him and he'd let me just buy whatever book. So I had like a Britney Spears book because I wanted the lyrics. I was obsessed with her. And then I bought an Alicia Keys book. And I remember hearing Harlem's Nocturne, which was the first song off of the Diary of Alicia Keys. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I need to become like this. I need to know how to write like this and then be able to sing and put lyrics together like this. And, you know, having music all around me, it wasn't something, you know, foreign, but I think that was the first time that I really began realizing myself within the music and realizing what I wanted to do and where I wanted to take the music. And so I started training in piano, started training myself, and then kind of on and off lessons during school. And I don't know, I just kind of, you know, throughout that journey, while I was doing theater, while I was doing dance, while I was doing all of these things, music had always been the constant.
So your musical journey started at the age of 7, you know, where you were one of the patrons at the Joy of Jazz festivals and watched greats such as El Clue, you know, I was Hot Sticks Mabuse and others, you know, on iconic stages at, you know, the now defunct The Orbit in Bramfontein and so on and so forth. But the interesting thing is your relationship with the guitar first, you know, and how you found the guitar and then you found the piano. Let's go back there.
Yeah, so when I was younger, my father began teaching himself the classical guitar. And he was the one that kind of put me in all of these spaces that would sneak me into jazz clubs and take me to the festivals. I still remember when the Joy of Jazz was at Market Square in Newtown. And so I remember it, you know, back then. And when he would, you know, go to music stores, there's two core memories I actually remember of my connection to music at that time. The first one would be he'd go to music stores and he would buy books because as he was teaching himself, as he was learning, Love More Music, which was in Melville, I think. I can't remember. And we'd just go there and I'd kind of be looking around, looking through the lyrics. You know, I really loved Britney Spears at the time. I loved, you know, Alicia Keys. I couldn't read music, but I would just kind of get the books as a gift and then just read along. As I look at the song, you know, listen to the song, I'd read it along with the lyrics. Although my dad had tried to teach me guitar, I ended up quitting because I was like, my fingers are hurting too much. I'm too cute for this. I'm not doing it. And so I then began learning. I got bought a keyboard at Tom's in Bramfontein, where I'd also spend a lot of time. And there I started teaching myself how to play the piano. And I was on and off with lessons throughout that time. But that was, you know, it was a super, super, obviously the guitar and my dad and the journey to music was through that. And kind of finding my own path from then has been a lifelong story and journey.
A beautiful journey it is, of course. We're spending time here with our cover story artist this Sunday. She's a vocalist, educator, storyteller, and maybe even an activist, which is something that we will get into a bit later in this hour. And she's talking to us from New York this Sunday. Of course, she is our guest on Kofifi FM 97.2. Now, you started a whole new journey, Naledi, 8,000 kilometers away from home. That was in the year 2018 when you became a student at the New England Conservatory, you know, in the United States. How did that happen? And I also want, you know, let's begin this story with your final year in UCT.
So when I graduated high school, I had always dreamt of coming to the US, actually. I remember when I was still in school, I went on their website and I would like be researching, oh, this is the school I want to go to. That's what I want to do. And NYU, I was in love with NYU at the time. And I remember sending them an email and being like, I want to be a student for this year. Da, 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 da. And one day in the mail came a package from them. And I literally remember just being so, so excited for the package. I opened it and was like a big poster saying, you know, future NYU student. So this was maybe when I was in grade 9 or something like that. Yeah. And so that hung on my wall for years and years. I was like, I'm going to make it. I'm going to go to the Big Apple. That's where I'm landing up. And so my matric year, I began to, you know, work towards this idea of coming to the US. And so, you know, at the time I was, you know, under the influence of, you know, my family and just kind of the status quo where it was like, you need to study something that makes sense and then you can go and do all this other music, whatever shenanigans. Right. And so because I was still passionate at the time about policy and diplomacy, I knew I wanted to see the world. I knew I wanted to learn more about people. I knew I wanted to advocate for people who couldn't advocate for themselves at the time. And so I was like, okay, I'll do international relations. Let me apply for those programs, but I'm still going to apply in the US. And so this kind of shifted my perspective on where I was applying, because I was always just like, I want to go to the best school for what I want to do. So I started applying to different schools, blah, 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 blah. And on the day of applications closing, I remember just having this feeling that was like, you know, I think I need to just, there's just one more thing I need to do. And so there was this program I was in love with at NYU at the Clive Davis Institute. And I decided, I was like in my bedroom, told my mom and my brother, let's go to step up, please. Actually, my brother knew about it. My mom didn't. And so I start recording videos. Like at this time, I don't have musical training. You know, I don't have a portfolio to send through. I didn't do music as a subject at school. It was just something I was doing on the side. And so I'm in my room recording things, recording videos that I'd uploaded on YouTube. I call my brother who also played guitar or plays guitar. And I'm like, Africa Kopatlon Tlala, this one song in the background. And I'm going to be singing, you know, while you do that. And so I put this application together and I send it through to NYU. And I remember, like, just as I was sending it, I literally prayed. I was like, God, if this thing goes through, because the program is just, it's got a really, really, really low acceptance rate. I think it's like 5% acceptance rate. I was like, it must be a sign. Like, there's no way. Yeah. So I apply and then I start at UCT in my first year. And, you know, I'm there. I'm enjoying it. I mean, Cape Town was a great time. I have no regrets. And then come March, April, when application decisions come out, I'm getting my decisions back. It's rejections on rejections on rejections. I'd applied to maybe five schools, excluding NYU. So my first rejection comes in. I'm like, okay, I've still got four more schools. And you know, my matric results were pretty good and my extracurriculars were good. So I was expecting to at least get in somewhere, you know? Yeah. Rejection, 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 rejection. I get into one school, but it was just a school that I just applied to for the sake of applying. I really didn't want to go there. So I'm in Long Street. I get my acceptance to NYU. And that's when I knew, you know, as I had said, I was praying and I was like, if this happens, it means, you know, it's a sign. And also because I had just not expected that much rejection from other places. But, you know, as they say, rejection is redirection. And so that's what that moment felt like. And so at that time, you know, I was like, okay, how do I get to NYU? Unfortunately, I couldn't put the funding together because that's another big thing people don't understand about the process. You know, there's just a lot of consideration, especially when it comes to money and all of that sort of stuff. So I couldn't get in at that time, but I knew that, you know, God has placed this purpose on my heart. And at that point, I knew the purpose was there already, but it felt like the purpose was being affirmed. And so when I got to my final year at UCT, I was like, I'm doing this again. Like, I know I'm supposed to get there and I'm going to get there no matter anjani. So while I was in Cape Town, you know, I had been performing here and there, kind of just like, you know, adjacent to my friends at the music school or just people at the music school adjacent. And so when time came for my auditions, I had people to like play with me some of the music. I asked Amanda Tiffin, who had mentored me previously during one of the youth jazz programs I had applied for Artscape Youth Jazz Fest. I was like, listen, I'm trying to go to America. Can you help me? And she got me in touch with Nikki Schreier, who had studied in New York at the time. And so Nikki helped me, you know, put together my applications. I applied to about five schools. I had a job in Cape Town at the time, and I was saving money so that I could come and do auditions, live auditions, and come see the schools. Like, I was like, this time I'm investing fully in the stream. Like, I'm not playing any games.
Yeah.
And so I came to the US, did my auditions, you know, got to see all of the schools. Again, I don't have training. So especially like in the US, the level already when you go into university is so much higher than I had experienced back in South Africa, where it's like, you know, these kids are going to camps every summer. They have high level training. They're playing with, you know, the highest level people. So I remember doing my auditions and feeling like, hey, you know, at the end of the day, I am who I am. I sang Nomfundo Kaluva's Tando, Tando Luhle. That was my audition song. And I feel like that element of it was really what got me into all the schools that I had applied to.
So you've done all the legwork, you've done the groundwork, the paperwork is done, you're on the plane and you touch down in a city, you know, with, that you're seeing for the very first time, maybe the second time, and to people with whom you've never met before, you know. And often we'd hear many South Africans who travel abroad or move abroad talking about, you know, taking something that keeps them connected to home, be it music or personal items. What was that for you?
Oh, interesting. So, yeah, I think especially because Boston was a very, that's where I ended up deciding to study. And Boston was quite an isolating environment. I remember one of the questions I was first asked when I was at conservatory was, what is most different about, you know, about Boston compared to your hometown? Because it's a very international school. And everyone was like, oh, the trees, you know, if people from China, from all these places, oh, the trees, the this, the that. And I was like, I mean, for me, I am the only black person in most places I go to. Like, I'm in the bus, it's me and another black person. Here at school, I was the only African person. You know, there are black people, but we're like 3% of the population. And so that was kind of like, you know, the how Boston felt. I would say at first when I left, the things that I took that reminded me of home were probably just like blankets and like letters that people had written to me. But I will say after my first semester here and my first trip home, I remember I tried to get used to the food and the spices they use here. And I suffered. Like, I didn't want to cook. I didn't want to do, because the spices were just awful. And the food was awful. Like, I couldn't eat meat my first couple of months here because I used to get sick. I had to be pescatarian. I became lactose intolerant. Hey, this is America, guys. Very, yo, I'm fununga. Sure, no, it's bad. But the one thing I always make sure I have abundance of is spices from home, so that if I'm missing home, as long as I've got, like, I can make food. Like, maubani, I made ujekle and stew because I was homesick. And so that's kind of like the things that I'm always making sure. I must have chutney. I must have my steak and chops and all of my other raja and all of that. That's, yeah.
Chicken. Oh,
it's a cover story. Of course, we're sitting at her feet and listening to her tell tales of these experiences. And also, you know, we're traveling through her musical timeline, listening to some music from her. And I want to talk about Lesakeng, you know, In the Crawl, which is a performance film presenting legendary songs from South African jazz selections, originals and jazz standards, Naledi, you know, which you recorded, in fact, and I watched it. I did. You know, in front of an NPR tiny desk format, you know, and what inspired this recording? And would you say that it was that part of your recital at the NEC that introduced you to the American audience?
Yeah, Lesakeng In the Crawl. So that was my recital project. Obviously, I graduated in 2021. And we were just off of COVID, right? So we were kind of still in COVID, but semi out of it. And so we couldn't have recitals as most people would have recitals. And although this was quite disappointing, it allowed me the opportunity to really share in the moment with all the people that I loved and that were influential in this journey. And it allowed me to share in that moment. You know, I created this virtual concert or performance film where I was really able to, you know, be one with my community and be one with the people that I had studied with and grown with and taught this music with. So Lesakeng In the Crawl was, it kind of came as I was deciding, you know, what is a recital supposed to look like? Like, I could just go there and sing all the songs I've been taught, all, you know, Sarah Vaughan, Ella, Carmen McRae, all these people that I love. But also it's my opportunity to really, again, say, you know, I've gone through this process. As I said, I arrived and I hadn't had training. And so I was like, you know, my greatest strength is just being me and being where I'm from. And so now Lesakeng was, I have gone through this process and I'm still me and I still celebrate where I'm from and who I am. And I really wanted this project. I remember I look back. So sometimes, not sometimes, most of the times when I do things, I like to do them like proper, right? I mean, it's a recital, it's a school recital, just make a poster, put it up around, let your friends come or whatever. But I was like, nah, I'm getting press for this. I'm doing interviews. I'm doing all of this stuff. And I think, you know, just as you said, this was my first introduction onto the American scene. Like, here is, you know, here's Naledi. Now I'm really stepping into my professional career. And so NPR did a cover story for me with that project. It got lots of American radio airplay. I actually did a couple of stuff in SA with Sis Notemba, Sis Brenda Sasani, all of those people. And it was really just for me like an ode to my people, which this debut album as well is, or my debut EP is also just an ode to my people and being like, you know, we're going to hear many recitals at the New England Conservatory, but you're not going to hear this music and you're not going to hear, you know, the stories of my people in this way. And what was also beautiful about it, yeah, you know, was that I got to really speak with my community, speak to my mother, my grandfather. My mother did a really nice interview with my grandfather that was part of that film, where it was maybe 2 hours. I had to like pick parts that made sense and heard like stories that I was like, oh my gosh, you know, he moved from the Eastern Cape to Soweto when he was 16 by himself. Yeah. And just hear all of that stuff and have those influences, hear about my grandmother's, really like, yeah. So that was kind of the thought process behind the psyching and talking about my people and my crawl, mm-hmm, and the people that have made me who I am.
Still on this topic, let's explore, you know, the connection with the history now of South African jazz and the music of the African diaspora and how it has influenced or maybe even still influences your sound.
Wow, I love that question. From many, many perspectives, from an ethnomusicological perspective, from a performance perspective, and just from my lived experience. So when I moved to the US, as I shared, at my conservatory, I was the only South African student. And I remember having, you know, I moved, went to New England Conservatory, and within like 3 months, they asked me to join the Black Students Union. So I'm on the Black Students Union, serving as like part of the board and everything. And before it became the Black Students Union, it was known as the African American Students Union. And so obviously, like, had I gone there at the time, I would have been a little bit out of place, you know, in the African American Students Union. But it was really a beautiful journey for me because I began to see just like the vastness and the connectedness, especially of the Black American story and the South African story. And I knew, like, studying jazz, I told myself I have to come to the US because this is the home of jazz. I want to, you know, understand where this music comes from. I'm also like very much I love history. I love music history. It's always been, you know, something that I'm passionate about. And so kind of connecting that South African history and that Black American history and finding all these dots that were making sense was just something that I really was privileged to, especially because of my isolation in the environment that I was in, which was an interesting thing because in being isolated, I yearned more to understand my story and my song and our story and our song. Mm. And in yearning to learn more about myself, I also yearned to learn a lot more about the people around me. And so while I was in college, you know, I was doing a lot of like research. Every paper that we would get where we could just pick a topic, I would pick something about South African history and South African music history. And I started reading a lot of ethnomusicology, the likes of Carol Mueller, and really getting into, you know, our early jazz history and how it became, how, you know, migration and protest and all of those sorts of things were influenced in our sound, but also how the American sound was so strongly connected, you know, in the creation of that and vice versa. It's kind of like, you know, one was feeding the other while the other was feeding the other. And you also saw it really manifest beautifully in the people who were in exile, you know, Bawoma, Miriam, Amle Tambulu, Ntate Kefas, all of those people. You also hear that, you know, that influence in such beautiful ways.
The K Jazz Show, Sundays on Kofifi FM 97.2.
Your debut project, but you know, is on the horizon, and shortly we will get to hear, you know, what you've been working on sonically. But if you had to tell our audience, of course, this Sunday, what the project is about, and what are the key conversations that you're having with us here?
Batu means people. In my home language of Sesotho, which many of you might know or not know, I don't know. but for me, you know, it took quite a while coming up with a name for this project. The first song I wrote off of it is titled Batuaka, which will be released when the project comes out. And people usually love this song because they feel like it, you know, even people who don't know the lyrics, don't know what it means. At every show that I have, they're like, Batuaka is the one. I had asked a South African friend about what are the sounds of home. And they shared with me a bunch of recordings, you know, Abdullah Ibrahim, Begum Selego, et cetera, et cetera. And I listened to those. And I remember sitting in a practice room and I just started playing that. And literally the lyrics kind of just came out, right? Yeah. And the song Batuaka, it speaks about, you know, all of the things that make home feel like home, all the things that are just kind of imagery, like the sun feels like it's hugging you and the sand is playing under your feet and all of these things. And I realized that out of everything that I miss about being home, like, you know, Nando's, yes, steers, whatever, but the thing I miss most about Batuaka is my people. And everything that I have done, you know, from that point and even before that point, has been informed by that, has been supported by that, has been held by that, my people. And so as I was like thinking of names for this project, like a lot of things came up. And one day someone asked me, I think they were like, okay, dude, what's the name of the project? I was like, okay, Batu, maybe just, let's just call it Batu. We'll see. That's a, you know, and I just kept saying it and it just felt right.
Fatelia Sepelabo
And so Batu is a collection of songs that I've written. Sans one song, there's a Dorothy Masuka song on there titled Kulala. But all of the songs I've written over the past 5 years, they are all just a collection of stories about my people, the people I've met along the way, as well as giving the people and the carriers of these stories the justice they deserve. So there's a big part of, you know, justice and social justice intrinsic to the music, which is intrinsic to me and my story as well.
Yeah, and of course, Kofifi FM, we're spending time with Naledi here. For Page Three, it is our bi-monthly feature, The Cover Story, a time to sit at the feet of our favorite musicians as they tell us tales of these travels. And if you've just joined us, welcome. This is the third and final hour of today's edition of The K-Jazz Show. Naledi, I want to get into the activist part, or the activist that is Naledi, you know, and I'm talking about here the Dreaming Girls Arts Foundation, an organization, you know, that's cultivating women in and girls in the arts, you know. Why was it important for you to create a platform of this nature?
So when I first did something Dreaming Girls related, I was at the University of Cape Town. It was the Day of the Girl Child, the UN Day of the Girl Child. And I was like, oh my gosh, I think this is a great opportunity to use music and arts to, you know, celebrate and talk about some of these topics that are affecting us as girl children, you know. And so I put together a lineup of authors, singers, artists who were in the Cape Town scene at the time, and we, you know, we spoke about this through our lenses, through our lived experiences. And when I moved to the US, I, you know, this thing kind of just stayed on my heart. You know, dreaming girls. I was like, what is that? And I remember the one night I kind of just, and it sounds a little bit wild, but I literally woke up in the middle of the night and I turned on my voice notes. And I was like, oh my gosh, how amazing would it be if, you know, we could have like this conference and we could have this space where we as women and girls are able to engage with like social justice and social development topics, but through the lens of, you know, through the lens of being an artist or through the lens of art, not necessarily just being an artist. And that was like the first time Dreaming Girls really was like, okay, this is the seed and how are we growing it? I spoke to people, I spoke to a mentor at my university at the time. And they were like, okay, we have a grant, apply for it and, you know, see what you can do with that. And so I applied for the grant and I remember feeling like, you know, the work of Dreaming Girls is really important because a lot of the things that I wanted to tackle and that seemed important were things that I needed. So it kind of grew from my own needs, to be honest, and seeing what it was like, you know, being a young woman in, you know, in South Africa, being a young woman with an artistic mind, because I worked in a lot of policy spaces. I did a lot with the UN, with Department of International Relations, etc., growing up while I was, you know, studying international relations and all of that. And I'd always found that in those spaces, as they were creating policy and they were creating ways to help society, they would never think of the role of the artist past us just getting there and singing. You know, like I would ask, like, okay, so what about artists? Like, how can we integrate them into some of our solutions for community? And they'd be like, yeah, I mean, we can get an artist to sing a song at the beginning of the conference or whatever. And that would frustrate me so much because I was like, I'm here, I'm an artist, I'm sitting in this room and I'm offering solutions, and solutions that you are all not able to think about because you're so boxed in to the way things have always been done. What would it look like to have more artists feel confident enough, have enough capacity to step into these spaces and talk about their experiences and talk about their opinions on a grander scale? Like, what are things we are not seeing because we're refusing to, you know, we're closing the doors on certain people? So that's kind of where Dreaming Girls grew from. And it grew from the need for more mentors in the space. Yeah. It grew from the need of more camaraderie, especially for women and girls who are in the arts. Like, you know, it's hard to find people who it's just hard. Like, they put us against each other. There's all these barriers that are created, not necessarily by us. So what does it look like for us to also, especially as young people, this was, you know, I did a lot of youth development programs. And one of the most impactful ones that I did was really about giving the youth the power to do what they can with what they have, right? So just because I'm young and I'm not a millionaire and I'm all of these things, it shouldn't make me feel like I am stuck until I get somewhere. Like, I can't be like, oh, I'll start changing the world when I hit my first million. I was really just like, right now with what I have, what are the things I can do? And that's where Dreaming Girl started from, because I was like, well, right now, this is what I have. I have these resources. I have this community around me. I don't have millions of dollars or rands of funding, but I know that with what I'm given, there's something that I can do. And I have seen, you know, looking back, I've just seen the impact on some of the girls. When we had the first conference in 2019, we had girls who were like, it was 13-year-olds till 31-year-olds that were at that first conference. And some of those girls are now like out of high school and they're working themselves, and they'll like reach out to me. Oh, Naledi, guess what? I've started a community theater project and I'm working with young women and girls and we're helping to. And I'm just like, that's so beautiful to see the impact of even what that one weekend or like what sustained mentorship looks like.
Yeah.
I want to, it's just for me also, I don't feel a rush with it. I'm like, this is my lifetime project and this is something that, you know, as I grow, it also grows. So yeah.
When a child dies every day, what does it mean?
Oh, this world's not for us.
When a mother can't even call her son, what does it mean?
Let us live and let us love.
Let's talk a little bit about personal stuff. You know, what inspires that lady? Or even maybe who?
Yeah. So when you said personal stuff, I got a little scared. I was like, oh, so what inspires me? I mean, the thing that I've spoken about over and over again, and I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but this is very true. It's just my people in general, the people that have been around me, my family, my mother, my brother, my sister, my cousins, all of the people who have just continued to share with me in their lives have been such a huge inspiration. And I'm always watching, always listening, always growing from them. Musically, I've had many, many inspirations. One of the big inspirations, which I would think is for a lot of South African, you know, vocalists, Mamira Makeba has been a big inspiration to me. And more especially because I've had the opportunity to spend some, you know, extended amount of time living in her story, learning about her story and telling her story. And so her life and her story have inspired me. Some artists that, you know, exist right now, Carmen McRae is one of my biggest inspirations when it comes to jazz. I remember after my first year, I had watched Jasmine Horn, who's another inspiration of mine. But she spoke about how she sat one summer and she transcribed an album from top to bottom. And she transcribed every instrument. She was like, I'm going to transcribe the horn. I'm going to transcribe, you know, the piano. I'm going to transcribe the bass. I'm going to transcribe lyrics. And so after I heard her speak about that, I was like, okay, I'm going to do the same. And so I went to Get Carmen, the album where she sings Monk. And that summer I just sat with that album, every single song. I was just like sitting there. And so I just grew a huge love for Carmen McRae. Thelonious Monk as well was someone that I was super inspired by musically. Another musical inspiration and someone who has impacted my my journey more than he knows, even though I've told him, is Nduduzo Makatini. Before I started studying jazz and all of that, I listened to his music quite religiously is a strong word, but I listened to it quite a lot. More specifically, the album where he sings with his wife, Oma Gugu, and I can't remember the name of the album right now. Okay, the name is escaping me. But I remember just before coming to the US, I had spoken to him and, you know, we're having a conversation. And I was like, yo, I'm so afraid to move to the US. I'm going to lose my voice. I'm going to lose, you know, I'm going to end up sounding like an American and I don't want to sound like an American, you know. And he said something to me that today, like, that really just walks with me everywhere I go. He had said, your voice, especially because it is a DNA, you know, a voice is, I always think about how the voice is so beautiful because it is the only instrument that is DNA. You have had your voice. Your mother has carried your voice. Your mother's mother has carried your voice, your mother's mother, you know? And so he had said, because of that, You can never lose who you are, because you are actually just a vessel for your grandmother and her grandmother and their grandmother. And so in everything you do, even when you're exploring different styles and are in different countries, your voice will always, you know, retain and be connected to your land and your story. And so that was really beautiful for me. And then also a big inspiration, like, I listened, you know, as I was putting together a list of songs to share with you, I realized that I listened to a lot of music that is not necessarily in the jazz room that has influenced my music a lot. I listen to a lot of country music. I listen to a lot of pop R&B. And so I draw inspirations from all of those sorts of places. It's hard. I can't name like single people, but there's a lot.
And it's a very unfair question to ask, especially if you surround yourself with this music, if you surround yourself with this artistry all the time, you have a special relationship with every single one of them. So it's very hard to choose, kind of like what I do. But anyway, it's not about me.
Exactly.
And about me, you know, as we wrap up our fellowship this Sunday, Naledi, when can we expect the official release of But?
I'm super excited to share that the album will be dropping, or the EP will be dropping, on the 21st of June this year. The first single, PXJ, Peace and Justice, has already released. And I'm so grateful to each and every one of you who are listening to it and who have been sharing it. It's doing really well. And then there will be another single released in the next couple of weeks. And this one is for my people. It's titled Arieng, which means let's go. And I'm super excited to have that one come out. And then there's three. We actually have quite a deep and long rollout process. And so we'll have another two songs releasing after Peace and Justice. And then, yeah, the project itself on the 21st of June. And I will be back in South Africa, hopefully in July, performing some of the music from the project. And I'm super excited for that.
Yeah, man, we look forward to all of it. And of course, in this past hour, Kofi, we'll be sharing, you know, pieces of these tracks that she's referring to that will be coming out, you know, much later in the year. But you've heard them here first. And of course, you can also find them on our playlist, which we'll share at the end of the show. Naledi, thank you so much, you know, for being such an inspiration. This hour has been nothing but incredible. And I hope, you know, you at home also got to know Naledi a little bit better. You know, we can't wait, you know, to see you back on our shores, you know, for some performances. You know, we'll be in the crowd, right? Any plans, you know, touring the cities? Because, you know, they want to know, not just Johannesburg. We're always getting crucified.
Woo! The pressure is on. No, so I'll be back. I'll be in Johannesburg. I'll be in Cape Town. And I'm hopefully going to be somewhere on one of the coasts that are not Cape Town. Okay. But I will share more information closer to the time. You can just follow me on my Instagram, Lady Music, or follow me on my Facebook, same, or follow my website, also Lady Music. And I'm very active on those places. So you'll know.
Once again, thank you so much for joining us this Sunday.
Thank you for having us. And thank you so much to everyone for joining in on the K-Jazz Show.
Yeah, man. She is a vocalist, educator, storyteller. Her name is Naledi, and she was our cover story this Sunday on the K-Jazz Show.